21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. This is the alleged Dr. Bob Hieronymus, a lowly PhD and a DFA and a few other degrees after that, hanging out in this part of the universe, and I can identify about 3% of it. That's pretty good these days. And of course, our executive producer and research assistant who pushes me all around and makes sure that I get to work on time is Laura Kortner. And our engineer is A.Y. Warshaw, who holds the world's championship for 625 pounds. He just said it last week. Way to go there, A.Y. Warshaw. I mean, you know, you got to be strong. That's right. Got to be strong these days. Well, friends, we got rules and regulations. Yes, even though we have finished one of the most spectacular Mercury retrograde periods in a long time. We'll get to that in a second. We got rules and regulations. First of all, human beings are not machines. We have an immortal component which is wiser than anybody you know. Two, we're not alone in the universe. We never have been. We live with invisible beings inside and outside our physical bodies. And, of course, what we do to the Earth, we do to ourselves. And you know what we've done to planet Earth, right? You're watching these tornadoes, aren't you? Yeah, yes, Maryland's getting more and more tornadoes. And it's just, is it all just by accident? It's just one of those freak things of nature, right? Well, we've been telling you for 30 years to look out for this stuff, guys. And it's going to get tougher. Well, happy new year and congratulations on surviving one of the most difficult Mercury retrograde periods I've ever experienced. Hey, did you lose anything over the past month? How about your car? Did you have any battery problems? I think we set world records with battery problems in my home. Did you run out of gas and have to walk home? How about your mail? Did you lose any of it? Did it get destroyed by some machine at the post office? Yes, that's right. We had all of these experiences and many more. This is our 23rd year since the birth of 21st Century Radio, and unfortunately, we had to go through all of those problems over the last month and a half, and I have experienced some pretty tough ones, but this was a winner. Tonight, we are being joined by one of the most remarkable women we've ever interviewed, Carolyn E. Cabello, a master in social work, is director of Akasha Institute, Alcyon Sacred Arts Alliance, and Hamsa Incorporated in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Well, I wish we were in Santa Fe right now. A highly regarded psychotherapist, spiritual healer, and channel for Divine Mother Mary. And you know what we think about the Divine Mother Mary. We have more Divine Mother Marys in our studio than I think that there's in any other studio on the planet. I don't know if there's other Mother Marys in it, but we got lots of them. And that's for good reason. We even got them outside, inside, outside. And she is the author of The Power of Sacred Space, Awakening to Soul Love in 25 Power Places. Welcome to 21st Century Radio, Carolyn, and Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you.
Did you have an exciting Mercury retrograde period yourself?
Well, as you were talking, I was thinking, yes. I usually do, but this one seemed to be more about having to change fast, suddenly heading in one direction, suddenly you had to move in another direction.
Yeah.
That was the main thing. We weren't home a lot, so we didn't have so much the mail and the car problems, but it certainly was, I think, emotionally challenging, nothing else.
Well, I was about halfway through your book, Soul Evolution, with Zarathustra, and on the Friday afternoon, it physically disappeared. And that has never happened in my entire life. I am certain it's going to reappear next week, but I understand now that it was, according to Michael Smith, a proof copy, and we will be receiving some other copies later on. But I found that to be an extraordinary situation. I was enjoying it so much because of the various types of rituals, especially, that this book is full of. There's a lot of information in this book. Which I cannot find right now, that I learned so much from. Now, Akasha Entertainment is your company. What is Akasha Entertainment and what's its mission?
It's a multimedia metaphysical company. And we create and produce and present metaphysical media products and events. And these are what I consider to be catalyst for personal and global transformation.
Well, they certainly are. Akasha, what does the word mean?
It's a Sanskrit word that means everything that was, is, and will be. And when I was meditating, I guess, in the maybe late 70s, mm-hmm. I saw this field of energy, just a total field of energy with all these little pastel lights moving around, kind of like molecules. And I asked my guru at the time, Muktananda, what would that be? It was very strange. And he said, that's the Akasha field.
Mm-hmm.
So I named my company that so that we could be free to do whatever we wanted.
Hey, do you remember that poem, Abu Bin Adam? Abu Bin Adam, may his tribe increase, awoke one night from a deep dream of peace and saw in the moonlight within his room an angel writing in a book of gold. That, remember, I was going to be a minister at one time and a priest another time, and obviously I was very fascinated by anything dealing with books of gold in regards to the Akasha and the Akashic Records, because especially with the work of when I was finally introduced in the late 50s, early 60s to Edgar Cayce, and I'm certain you're very familiar with his important work.
I am. I wouldn't say very familiar, but I certainly am familiar and certainly totally respectful of what he has done and how he contributed to the world.
Well, Akasha Metaphysical Film Festival. You've got the Akasha Metaphysical Film Festival coming up this June 24th in 2011. Certainly, it's a few months away. We're aware of that. But tell us a little bit about these film festivals.
Sure. Well, actually, for us, it's not that far away because a festival is amazingly complex to put on. We did one in Santa Fe, very successful. Wonderful films and lots of fun parties, and my idea is to really make it a festival so people can enjoy each other and celebrate spirituality however they want, but it's kind of a collective community event. So in order to create something like that, it does take some time and focus. So this is going to be in Carmel, California, at the community center. It's a lovely place. We just moved here about 2 months ago. Very receptive, open, friendly community. And as far as the Metaphysical Film Festival goes, we try to choose, well, we work with a website called Without a Box, which is where filmmakers can look at festivals to see if their film would be appropriate for it, and then they can submit their film to Without a Box, and then they can reach us through them. We've had these wonderful films, but we focus on out-of-the-box films, like supernatural, science fiction, life after death, EPs, anything that kind of, artistically beautiful, entertaining, and kind of makes you think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand that the previous festival was in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Now, boy, you're living Santa Fe, New Mexico has to be one of the more sacred spots on this planet. Could you tell us a little bit about Santa Fe? But you've moved out away from there now, huh?
Right. It's kind of like Yeah, I was very drawn to Santa Fe for many years. First to Sedona, then to Santa Fe, and I felt like this is the place where my work could flourish. And then over the last couple of years, it just felt like it was time to move on to someplace else, especially connected to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And Santa Fe has a lot of energy, a lot of great energy in the mountains and the land. Got a little, was sort of tense, with the economic downturn and a lot of people suffering and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a great place to have a festival.
And again, you've moved on to Carmel, California.
Uh-huh.
Could you? I'm very fascinated about locations and the kind of energies that
right.
exist in within, and this is those locations. This is something you're quite expert at, aren't you?
Yes, I'm highly sensitive, and I love it, and I hope that I can help other people appreciate it. You sound like somebody who does already.
Yeah, yes.
So that's great.
Carmel, California, do you know anything about its history?
A little bit. There were several Indian tribes here.
Yeah.
Very powerful shaman was here. Not sure when, maybe in the 1700s, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And the Spanish came. And they built a mission here, which is still a very powerful place. I was there, and it still has very good energy. And they kind of dominated the Indians, as they did
yeah.
in places.
Mm-hmm.
But that the power of the land, nobody can take that away. So it's still here, and I hope for our festival we're going to have some native people perform that are from this area. We did that in Santa Fe. It was very, very successful. People really appreciated it.
Well, Sacred Space Film. Could you tell us about the process of making your new film, Sacred Space, Searching for the Source?
Yes, I'd love to. It's an introductory film, basically, and it talks about what is sacred space, how can you access the power. I'm sort of the main... person that's being interviewed in, since I've studied this for a long time, it's kind of like sharing information that so that people, anyone can have access to this amazing, beautiful, healing power. And so the film sort of touches on different things like the Native American view of sacred space and what are ley lines, how does the medicine wheel work, how the Mayans view sacred space, how a personal altar can create sacred space, and how does Feng Shui create sacred space. It's sort of an overview of different ways of approaching sacred space. And then we're already working on another, my daughter Sophie and I are working on another one about Southeast Asia sacred places and how their spirituality influences their view of sacred space and their view of spiritual architecture. And we have more, India and Central America, and let's see what else. We did a little filming in Washington, D.C., and Hawaii, Europe. So many possibilities.
What makes a space sacred, dear?
Oh, well, it's two things. It's the energy that it contains. It's has a healing power, a natural healing power. And it's also how a culture would view a sacred space. For instance, I remember the Mayan shaman in the film described the entrance of the Spanish into their culture and how the Mayans, it's just a space where the spirits are. That's
mm-hmm.
what she said.
Mm-hmm.
And so the spirits would like certain places. And they don't have any buildings or anything there. They burn incense and I think sometimes have fires. But she said that it's just a space, but it has a special energy.
Mm-hmm.
So then the Spanish came in and they had to build one wall at a time of a square in order for the Mayans to have anything to do with their church because they couldn't understand how a physical wall would create a sacred space.
Mm-hmm.
example.
Yeah, yeah.
So in terms of, I think it can be sacred to just personally. Somebody might love a tree in their yard, or someone might, you know, again, create an altar. Someone might feel even a place where they where they got married, let's say, was sacred. So it's all relative, and yet if you look culturally, these places are usually known historically for centuries, and people have marked them in some way.
You did a book on this in 1999.
Uh-huh.
Just before we hit the new millennium. Of course, there's controversy as to whether or not we really hit the new millennium yet, but I can accept the possibility that we have.
Right.
And so the reason why I think sacred space is so important is because it is possible within your own home to create sacred spaces, isn't it?
That's right. That's like a personal altar.
Yes.
Some people even create little temples in their houses. You can have like a teepee or hogan or a little temple in Bali. They have their houses are essentially complete temples with different. They're a microcosm of the macrocosm of their larger temples that they have in the mountains and on the ocean shore, and they're all kind of based on this understanding of architecture as a way of containing and transmuting space.
Well, what do you think will happen in a society when the principles of sacred space gain mainstream acceptance?
Well, I think people will certainly have a different view of native cultures and their sacred places. For one, I think they'll have a really surprise when they realize that the earth itself has this healing power that can actually heal diseases, it can heal emotions, it can inspire people spiritually, it can help people be prophetic. Most people, it's just a matter of education, I think, but it's there.
It sure is.
And I think these places will be more protected, and actually I think we'll have a greater sense of our global interconnectedness and sharing spaces, holy places or power places in you know, places of what we could call our enemies. It's all over the earth. It's all the same in a way. And maybe that will help with healing the differences.
Undoubtedly it will. I think it will change our planet as we know it today.
Do you?
Yes, I do. Sacred spaces, the more that are created, eventually they're going to start overlapping. And when they do that, my heavens, the entire planet could be a sacred place again. A very large sacred space, but, you know, one that would literally advance, you know, be a place where we could advance our personal spiritual growth considerably in comparison to what we're stuck with today.
Yes, I think so. It could be a really strong catalyst.
And so that's the reason why
we need.
That's why I wanted to congratulate you for doing this, dear. You've been doing this a long time.
Thank you.
You have laid the foundation, haven't you?
I hope I have.
What do you mean you hope? Of course you have, honey. Of course you have.
Well,
I mean, you are a very dedicated soul.
I am.
And, you know, this is really your life. This is not something that you're going out there just to make a living on. This is something that is deeply involved with, not just in my opinion, this particular lifetime, but probably multiple lifetimes. I apologize if I've stepped over out of bounds here in saying that, but I mean, it seems to me that you've gathered all your stuff together over millenniums and decided to create a foundation in a very sacred space in a very sacred country. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm just so proud that you've joined us here on 21st Century Radio.
Oh, that's very nice.
Well, we're going to take a break, hon, and we'll come back. And we need to get into the book that somehow ran away from me called Soul Evolution with Zarathustra, Wisdom for 2012, because we're going to need a good deal of wisdom concerning that. Because I'm certain that most people totally misunderstand what 2012 is all about. So we'll try to advance some theories on that with Carolyn Cabello, Soul Evolution with Zarathustra, Wisdom for 2012. Create space, visit Carolyn online at akashaentertainment.com, and that is linked on the front page of 21stcenturyradio.com, so you don't have to remember even how to spell anything. It's automatic. If you're a business owner or executive seeking growth yet determined to cut wasteful costs, consider outsourcing your whole marketing department to The Selling Well. The Selling Well offers businesses truly superior marketing services without all the overhead costs associated with employing a full-time marketing executive. Learn more online at thesellingwell.com. That's thesellingwell.com, named after one of our greatest symbols of prosperity, the well. Visit thesellingwell.com or call The Selling Well's managing partner, Plato Hieronymus, at 443-939-1890, thesellingwell.com. We have a tradition in the Hieronymus household. Important dates we mark by checking in at the Bonded Jewelry Exchange at 1430 Reisterstown Road at Old Court Road off Beltway Exit 20. In business for 30 years, Bonded Jewelers has slashed prices on all of its inventory. Over $2 million of fine jewelry and watches must be sold at the lowest prices ever offered to the public. Everything must be sold. Their entire jewelry inventory has been drastically reduced, and you can save up to 70% off suggested retail. Bonded Jewelry Exchange, 1430 Reisterstown Road at Old Court, Beltway Exit 20, 410-653-9000, Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., Thursdays till 7 p.m. They accept trade-ins, and they pay top money for gold. Meet them under the big blue awning in their total inventory liquidation.
Hi, this is Phyllis Galdi, editor-in-chief of Fate Magazine, F-A-T-E Magazine, and you are listening to 21st Century Radio with this wonderful, famous Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio with our guest Carolyn Cabello, Soul Evolution with Zarathustra, Wisdom for 2012, and visit Carolyn online at Akasha. That's spelled A-K-A-S-H-A Entertainment, akashaentertainment.com, which is linked on the first page of 21stcenturyradio.com, so you don't have to remember anything. Just go up to our website, and there she is. She's going to be hanging out there for a while. All right. Now, Carolyn, are you with us?
I am.
How's your pitching arm tonight, hon?
Pretty good.
Good. All right. Okay. Now, you've written a new book of channeled material called Soul Evolution with the Zarathustra, Wisdom for 2012. What do you believe will happen in the 2012 shift?
Well, I can't say I know anything for sure because things are changing so fast. I know something really interesting, and I'm not alone with this. In the early 80s, when I began channeling, I was with a group in New York, and we all sort of independently could feel that there was going to be a tremendous change coming up. We didn't know when, but relatively soon, with floods and tsunamis and earthquakes. And we all independently came up with this. And yet, between that time and now, a lot of things have shifted on Earth inside people's hearts. And I think that those sort of prophetic thoughts, I think that it's not that way now. I think we've shifted a lot of the turmoil that the Earth is feeling and that we are individually feeling, and we continue to shift very fast into a much more harmonious and balanced place. So in terms of 2012, what I see happening, I can, at least in general, is that we'll move more towards global interaction and global government in some ways, hopefully positive, just because we'll become more interdependent. Now, what will be the catalyst for that? I hope won't be what we saw back then, which was all these natural disasters. There could be some. They're already happening right now with these floods and mostly floods, it seems. Earthquakes, too. But everyone, I would imagine, all over the world is being challenged in their own way, challenged to face their fears, challenged to become truthful,
mm-hmm.
challenging to become knowledgeable, a sense of community, a sense of being a part of a whole. And then for some people, this stress, which I would imagine everybody listening, including me, and apparently you too, the stress is increasing, but it's like how we manage it, how we find our balance, how we stop blaming ourselves for things that go wrong, and how we stop, you know, loving each other and being open to what is really our truth and the general truth. So as we do that, you know, it's a fine line. We to grow spiritually and emotionally, we have to be pushed. There has to be challenges in our lives.
Yes.
But we just don't want too many.
Well, certainly. But, you know, as you know, there have been so many groups that have been visualizing positively over, I mean, I'm talking about decades of this.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably, I hate to say this in a certain sense, but it certainly much more regularly on the west coast of this country than in particular the east coast.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that in many ways the west coast is advanced in some very important ways that seems that they lay the foundation and the rest of the country eventually understands and grows a bit. And that it appears to me that work that has been going on for decades has mitigated a great deal more of what we would have been suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of those kind of things that one becomes successful at doing this, but at the same time, claiming credit for it would be kind of ridiculous because that's
right.
What we're supposed to be doing on this planet anyway.
Well, they're actually doing it in Australia and India, Thailand, Tibet. So, and what's beautiful about all this is that all the people that have been doing it are sort of coming out and sharing that with other people. And by doing that, we create an even greater force.
Yes. Yes, that's right. And that's why I mentioned, last segment or so, you're laying the foundation, especially in dealing with sacred space, is the kind of thing, well, many of us work in the direction of that, but you have stuck to it. Many of individuals that I knew have withdrawn from that area because economically it's a hard thing to do.
It is. It is.
It is not easy to serve others from that standpoint. And that's why I think your work is so important, because you're a good example of serving without expecting anything in return.
Right. That's true.
That's really key to having prayers answered, which I think is why the more sacred space we have, the better from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So one last question in this area. How do you think, how can we heal the earth? From your perspective, what is the best way to do that?
I'm sure there's many ways. My particular way would be for people to go to sacred places and do ceremonies and help release any negative energy, pain, and fear that's held there. The earth has a energy field just like we do, with chakras and painful trauma, and it's a living being. So it's kind of like when we go there and we support the earth, and through our beings we can help release, in a battlefield, you can help release all the souls and the pain that's held in that space. I used to do that all over the world. And,
congratulations, boy! That is something to do, because
most people. It sounds like it, but it really wasn't too hard for me. I think it just comes naturally, and As you said, I think I've done it before.
Yeah.
And so when people gather in these places and they share their opening and their love and their caring, I think the earth feels it. And it's just like we, if you put your hand on somebody, a healing hand on somebody and on the chakra, let's say, and that releases the pain and the fear and all the negative experience that person has had in this lifetime and others, we can do the same for the earth. And yeah. Then that, in turn, will help the earth stay in balance. I think the danger is, as I can see it, is the polar shift. And I have thought this for many, many years, and once I was in northern Spain walking across the Camino del Santiago, it's a pilgrimage place in northern Spain, and went to a little chapel, and there was a box of relics. There was nobody in the chapel. I was with a few people. We were taking a pilgrimage together, and I put my hand out to that box of relics, and I don't even know who it was. And all of a sudden, I had this image of how the Earth was suspended in space, interconnected with planets and stars and, kind of close to us and really far away. There was all this network of connection. And a lot of things that are taking place now are headed towards trying to keep the Earth stable.
Yes.
And not shift. And I know my work is greatly involved in that, and so are many, many people in many different ways. And already I think it's helped. I don't know. I can't say what is going to happen. I don't think it's going to be a big shift. Right now I don't think so. But with all our work, we can have a difference. We can make a difference.
But certainly, I think that human beings, having the divinity within them, can make one heck of a difference.
That's right.
Where, you know, it's not that stones and vegetables and animals aren't sacred, because they are, but when we can become conscious of ourselves and conscious of assisting others and helping others, it makes a very big difference.
It does.
Especially if we take care of our animal brethren, who are they're pretty sacred. I mean, you know, they're healing us, and you know, they're looking out for us, and we should be looking out for them rather than the kind of things that we see in the media, which disturb me a great deal. But it's very unpopular to discuss that particular thing right now. However, we need to take our final break of this hour, and then we're going to get to the book that I will once again find again, that, and this is really important, because you've been channeling Mother Mary and Zarathustra for over 30 years. And that's longer than we've had this show. And we need to talk about that, because obviously we feel very strongly about Mother Mary being the key to the healing of our planet. We'll be back with our guest, Carolyn Cabello, Soul Evolution with Zarathustra, Wisdom for 2012. Visit Carolyn online at akashaentertainment.com, which is linked on the front page of 21stcenturyradio.com, so you don't have to remember how to spell it.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Next week on 21st Century Radio, gratitude, trust, wonder, and joy. How do these qualities help us to discover the truly sacred, even better than conventional religion? Sunday night at 8, 21st Century Radio, Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Hey, there's nothing like slipping back into a previous lifetime, air friends. How would you like to win a free 21st Century Radio library of books and magazines and CDs and DVDs and stuff like that, huh? But especially the book that we're talking about tonight. We're going to be receiving a copy of that book soon. And this is Carolyn Cabello's book, Soul Evolution with Zarathustra. And as a matter of fact, it's courtesy of Akasha Entertainment and the Akasha Institute. If you can answer this question, you might be able to take home that entire library of books. There's about 20 different items in there. Now, who hosted 21st Century Radio last week. Tell us who hosted 21st Century Radio last week. And if you can do that, you're going to win, but you got to qualify. Here's how to do it. If you know the answer to this hour's quiz question on 21st Century Radio and you have not won from us in the last 60 days, call in now. 410-922-6680. That's 410-WCBM-680. First with the right answer wins. Prizes are available for you to pick up at the WCBM studios in Pikesville after Friday of this week. Winners have 60 days to pick up the prizes and must wait 60 days before winning another prize from 21st Century Radio. Good luck.
This is Dr. Jacques Vallée. You're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus, the reference in the study of the paranormal.
Hey, we're a reference. Well, you just heard the voice of my favorite ufologist, Dr. Jacques Vallée. You know, you would have seen him, at least someone portraying him in Close Encounters. No. Is this Close Encounters of the Third Kind? Yes, that's right. Of course, he wasn't paid, and we raised holy hell with that particular company that did that film in regards to that. He wasn't paid, neither was J. Allen Hynek, people that really just did not have the income they should have had, and they took their information, but unfortunately they didn't compensate them for it, and I don't think that was very nice. Now, our guest, of course, is Carolyn Cabello, and we're now going to talk a little bit about the key book, which we are going to rediscover, we hope, within the next couple of days, Soul Evolution with Zarathustra, Wisdom for 2012. Now, dear, you've been channeling Mother Mary and Zarathustra for 30 years. How did you get started? How did you get started in channeling?
Well, it's interesting. My sister had twins with an Italian man, and one of the twins died in 2 months from crib death. And I was at the wake, and an Italian Buddhist practitioner came up to me, and she said, "You have a light coming out of your hands. You should study healing." So I went back to New York. I believed her, and found a person to teach me about healing and channeling. And her name was Barbara Brennan, and she's gone on to be quite
Barbara
awesome.
Brennan?
Mm-hmm.
You studied under Barbara?
First class.
Yes, I'll tell you. She's great. She is. No, she's legendary.
Yeah, I know.
Two legends together, you guys. That's wonderful.
Well, kind of. I studied with her for a while, and then I went off on my own, and I started teaching a combination of transpersonal psychology, channeling, and laying on of hands. It was similar to what she taught, but I just went in my own particular way. And so as I developed spiritually, different guides came to me. My first one was in her class, and it was someone that looked like an Iroquois Indian, a man, a very big man with a little topknot hair and a feather in it, mm-hmm. Big muscular man, and he chanted. That's all I said was I just spoke chants. And then gradually he left, and then Zarathustra appeared, and I didn't even know who Zarathustra was. And so Barbara first saw him, and then gradually I saw more and more of him. He was a man. He had a little pill kind of hat on and multicolored robes. And the interesting thing was I didn't really see what his face looked like until just before Mary came in. And he had beautiful blue eyes and a beard, gray beard, and very friendly, very vibrant. But for some reason, I wasn't supposed to see his face. I'm not sure why. But meanwhile, I started channeling him for myself, but also for groups. And this book came out of lectures and then just personal channeling that I did with him. Mary came afterwards. He sort of faded off into the distance. I think it was because I began to heal a lot of my own emotional issues with my father or with the masculine. And so what I needed to go into was more healing of the feminine. And so then Mary appeared. And I channeled her for 2 years before I asked what her name was. And I was raised as a Unitarian, so I was very surprised that Mary, Mother of Jesus, would come to me. I didn't believe in God growing up or anything except for Jesus was a great prophet. But I think that made it easier. And also when I started taking people to sacred places, myself first, doing that acupuncture work and then later taking people, Mary would always appear. Her voice would always, her energy was in all these places for healing the earth, for healing the people who had died there, for healing the people that were there.
Mm-hmm.
And I just grew more and more close to her and then ended up writing a book with her, and she's still here.
And that was
Zarathustra's still here. I've actually moved on. Well, not moved on, but added to my repertoire, I guess. I'm now chanting healing chants from the language of light. And I think it's like a conglomeration of many entities. It's not just one spiritual guide. It's very, very high energy. And I just recorded a CD with chants for healing all kinds of diseases, for like AIDS and digestive problems, skin problems, arthritis, a lot. I can't remember. It must have been like, I think, 20, 25 diseases, plus the healing the heart, the emotional heart, and helping people realize their soul's purpose. And it just came on very strongly. So that's another, that's my latest form of channeling. But this book came out with my actually strongly, that was in the early 80s, and this is a revision, sort of update of it, partly because of my personal evolution. I later, when I was rewriting the book, I asked, which I had never asked before, did I know him in a past life? And he said, and let me see, I have it right here, he said, you and I were soulmates in the time that I was Zarathustra. We could not marry, for I was spoken by another, but our hearts knew each other in all ways. And he goes, and I was a servant that came to him, yet an angel beholden unto no one. So that's a kind of, that's the way he speaks, those words.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite different than Mary.
Well, Mary has, as I mentioned a little earlier, we have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Marys here with me tonight, besides
really?
Yourself, dear. Yeah, no, we have... One of the wonderful things about having your broadcast studio in your home. Because, you know, just like this is a sacred space. And in this sacred space, we have all the loving beings that have healed infinite numbers of souls in many different ways. And of course, they're helping us right this very moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're never alone.
Right.
And this is one of the things that is so hard for us being in these physical bodies, and we lose our loved ones, and they're still with us, but unfortunately we can't necessarily see them, and so we're suffering more than they are. And
That's right.
And it is so sad, because soon as we get older, more and more of our friends that from this lifetime and others have passed on. But Mary has been a great inspiration to our family. And, of course, my wife is Jewish. And she calls quite a stir amongst the rabbis.
Well, probably Mary was originally Jewish, so...
Yes, I know. And that's what she said, you know. Well, you know, what do you expect? Jesus was a Jew. Mary was a Jew. So, you know, what do you expect?
Well, what's interesting is I put it in my book. My image of Mary, although she feels, I'm sure, one incarnation of she was the mother of Jesus, but in this, I also saw her when I was helping people cross over. The image of her was this large spirit with multicolored light skirt, huge skirt, a female with feathers, a kind of an owl face, human, but looked, had an owl look to it. It didn't look at all Christian,
mm-hmm.
but it was definitely still the vibration of unconditional love and just that wonderful feminine support.
Well, that's one of the things I think the Jesus Christ was, and his work and service to this planet was really key. That unconditional love. Being able to love all, not condemn any. That,
right,
unfortunately is not what's happened with Christianity today, as we have seen. And it's that's one of the reasons why when I was going to become a priest and a minister at times, I had to back off, because when I would try to talk to other ministers and other priests about what was going on up at the altar during the Mass of the Holy Eucharist, especially, all kinds of angelic things are going on up there, and the nuns knew it.
Oh.
The nuns at the, you know, my friends at the Notre Dame, etc., my friends were all nuns, and they were all over 70 years old, and we would have one whale of a wonderful time, because they wanted to talk about these things, and they could not talk about those things with the priests.
Wow.
And it really, I saw something that really shook me deeply, in the sense that here was someone, this one particular nun that I worked with, Sister Regina Geiger at Notre Dame, for a long time, and it was so sad when she said to me, "Bob, there's all these things going on at the altar, and the priest doesn't know it, and he can't see it. He doesn't even believe it." And she said, "Well, you know, it's unfortunate," and she was right. She's right. It is unfortunate, because it is that healing quality of the Mother Mary, etc. Boy. I'm sorry. I'm getting carried away. I apologize.
No,
it's just important for most of our listeners to know that there are things within just traditional religions that need to be looked at more carefully, especially those sacred spaces, because those sacred spaces used by the church have been going on for thousands of years. That's a long time.
Long before Christianity.
Correct.
Actually, in the same places.
In the same places. That's right. That's right. Well, okay. Now, how do you know? Now, let's see what time. Oh, we got about a couple of minutes here before this hour is up. The reason why we normally do not have many channelers on 21st Century Radio is because many of the ones that I have interviewed over the last couple of decades did not take care as to who they were channeling.
Oh.
And that can be a problem.
It can be.
And that's one of the good things about your book, the one that came out before, Soul Evolution with Zarathustra. You approach it really, in my opinion, scientifically, spiritually scientifically, in the sense as to what can and cannot be accomplished along those lines. But how do you know when you're connected to spirit and not ego or one of the other forces which are just trying to inveigle your interest?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good question. I know when I started, after the Iroquois Indian, I would be sitting, waiting for him to come, and then I felt other energies trying to come in, and one way I knew this was not good is I felt uncomfortable. I felt like, go away, I don't want you to be near me. And luckily, they did go away. I think it's a matter of personal selection, I guess you could say, but also knowing yourself, being sensitive enough to know, okay, this is not okay. I say no to this. Just like you would say no to a person you would meet or a situation that you knew wouldn't be good for you. It's the same thing. I would always ask for the highest and I forgot exactly what I would say, but the highest and most beneficial energy. But after a while, both Zarathustra, I mean that we were so close, I didn't doubt them at all.
We have to pause right here for the top and take a break at the top of the hour to hear the news. And I understand the Ravens won the game, so religion is good in Baltimore once again. With our guest Carolyn Cabello, we'll be right back.
the clock. And breaking news now on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus and Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Researchers at Johns Hopkins are seeking volunteers with a diagnosis of cancer to participate in a scientific study of self-exploration brought about by psilocybin. Psilocybin is a psychoactive substance found naturally in mushrooms, which has been used for centuries as a sacrament for religious and spiritual purposes. Volunteers will be given careful preparation before receiving the psilocybin in a comfortable, supportive setting. Structured guidance both during and after the session will facilitate integration. This study complies with all FDA regulations. Please call 410-550-5990 or visit cancer-insight.org. Confidentiality will be maintained. That's 410-550-5990 or www.cancer-insight.org.
Look up your chimney. The sky ain't blue, it's kinda yellow. You know it's true.
It's so hard to figure what it's all about.
When your outside's in,
inside out,
and your downside's up.
Oh, what do you think he's saying there? Outside's in, downside's out. What is this? Is this as above, so below, as within, so without? Yeah, that's exactly what it is. That's right. You just learned something, friends. That's the reason why I was hanging out backstage with Hendrix and these guys. Mainly because they were saying something they were conscious of. And they were conscious of the fact that we've destroyed the earth and it's coming back and we got to lend a helping hand. So we're going to undestroy it. We're going to rebuild it. And, of course, one of those people that is doing it, that is doing it and has been doing it for decades here, is with us tonight for the next dull 20-some minutes, Carolyn Cabello. Soul Evolution with Zarathustra, Wisdom for 2012. And you can visit Carolyn online at akashaentertainment.com, and that is linked on the front page of 21stcenturyradio.com, so you don't have to remember how to spell it. All right. Now, Carolyn, one last question about Mother Mary. If someone is interested in channeling Mother Mary or Zarathustra, can they do it?
Well, I don't know. I think it's kind of like if you have an affinity towards that energy in other lifetimes, your soul is connected to it. It's a lot easier, I'll say that.
Mm-hmm.
But with the messages that these spiritual forces, I think they're much more than just simply guides. These spiritual forces have, anybody can benefit and feel, can enter into that vibration of that particular spiritual force. And like for reading a book or reading the channel material, the words and the way it's said, in some ways even my voice, helps that person listening to reach, to raise their consciousness so they can enter into that same state.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so it's not, yeah.
Well, that's one of the important things about your book, Soul Evolution with Zarathustra. You have, at least when I got to page 68, before it ran away, wherever.
Oh, you almost.
When you get to further into the book, you have various. With every section, you have various rituals,
mm-hmm.
and they are done very clearly. I mean, it's very. Friends, what I'm trying to say is this. It is so well written that you're not going to have trouble in understanding these particular, let's say, rituals or methods by which to do this. And that's a difficult thing to do in a verbal form. It really is. Now, but you've been leaving sacred journeys and travel ceremonies across the planet. could you tell us what some of your favorite memories or favorite places or temples that you've traveled to?
I love them all. I guess the ones that I would think of would be Machu Picchu and some temples in Thailand, India, volcano in Guatemala, Lake Atitlan. Where else?
Have you ever been to New Zealand?
No, I've never been to Australia or New Zealand.
Hmm.
On my list. I wanted to go to the Dome Rock, but I haven't made it yet.
Oh, boy, I hope you do. I'd like to try to make it someday myself, especially down there where the very ancient part of our world in that particular, those particular areas. I mean, very ancient. By the way, I haven't seen this yet, but you have an Avalon Temple of Connection board game. Could you tell us about this board game called Avalon Temple of Connection, and what gave you the inspiration, and what do people do in it?
Well, it's a spiritual board game. You can play it alone or with a group. It incorporates sound, light, healing modalities, movement, and it came to me after my husband died in a car accident. I was severely traumatized, and I was looking everywhere for healing modalities that would really help me. And I tried a lot of different ones, and they all helped a little bit. And then I was sitting in the chapel in Chimayo, which is near Santa Fe, New Mexico, and this is an ancient pilgrimage place, and it's in our first film, the Sacred Space film. There's a little description of it, when I'm there, and this place has the power of healing from many centuries ago, and people still go and have an enormous pilgrimage every year at Easter.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting in the church. I would go to a hot spring and then to this little chapel every week to try to find whatever could make me feel better. And as I sat there, I brought a piece of paper, which I usually do, a notebook or something, to see what's coming through. And this whole design of this game came. And it's all about a sacred journey based on the design of a sacred temple. And it actually shifts the DNA. It helps us move into a healing space. It clears past karma. I don't really myself understand the whole thing yet. Examples would be, there are cards in the beginning. You pick karma cards. These are issues that you may have come into this lifetime to heal. And I remember one of them was, one of my classic one is lost a child in childbirth. And this woman was trying to get pregnant, and she couldn't get pregnant. And she did the game, and she got pregnant. Two or 3 months later, after years and years of trying not being able to. And what happened was her like core memory system shifted, so that she released that pain of losing a child, and so she was more able to receive another child without fear. That's just an example.
I see. Yeah. Well, you've also written a book called Esteban Ascension. No, I didn't pronounce that correctly.
Oh, that's fine.
Esteban Ascension, which you're giving away for free on your website. That's extraordinary. Can you tell? By the way, friends, you know, I just wanted to point something out here, and that is many times that's one of the ways you can tell about a genuine teacher. And that is, they are so dedicated to helping and assisting and serving others that many times they're so generous, like Carolyn is. I mean, this is an extraordinary thing to do, as far as I'm concerned. It's not the normal thing that happens on the websites, by the way. Can you tell us about the fascinating story behind this book and what inspired you to write it?
Well, it is that man that died, that inspired me to create Avalon, died in a car accident. I was in the car in Spain, and we were just driving along going to Cordoba, and all of a sudden, I think he went to sleep, and an hour and a half later, He was dead in an operating room in a hospital that was half a tent. So I just knew as soon as we drove into the hospital with a drunk ambulance driver and a tent, I knew that I just had to surrender to this.
Oh, my.
And so I did, and he did die, which was incredibly shocking to me. And so during the course of the next couple of days and later, I used every strength, every talent, every intuition I had to stay communicating with him. Because I was so, I mean, I'm going to cry. I was so sad to lose him so suddenly. And this book is a result of it's talking about all the different ways I could communicate him. And for me, these are real. And one of the outstanding ones is that I was in a hotel and I was afraid to go to sleep because I was afraid to lose this connection. And finally, after, I don't know, 36 hours, I couldn't stay up anymore. And so I said, okay, I'm going to go to sleep. And there were twin beds in the room, and I looked over, and he was there. He was lying there about four inches maybe above the bed, straight, kind of transparent looking, wearing the same shirt, same clothes he was wearing when he died. And I just knew that he appeared to help me. And so this book is about that and the many different other things that happened to me to, I think, pass on to other people that we don't die. We just change form, go into the spirit world. And I also teach, and all my work is about my own experience. So that's a real one.
Mm-hmm. Well, that must have been extremely difficult. I, even though all of us may know what happens to us as we pass on, you still can't, at least I cannot. That doesn't appease the feeling of the of missing someone that you love so dearly that you've worked with for.
That's right, the loss.
I mean, yeah, because this obviously, your relationship to him has had a lot to do with why you incarnated. You know, is really key.
And even that experience of losing him has a lot to do with my incarnating and having to go through that and then having to pass on that information.
That's right. Yeah. Now, what future projects are you working on, hon?
Well, I have quite a few, actually.
I bet you do.
I have more Sacred Space movies, as I spoke earlier. I'm working with my daughter Sophie on that, and two of our friends, one husband, one boyfriend, who are cameramen. And we are going to create at least four more. And then I have three screenplays that I have in development set in Bali, India, and Mexico. These are feature films, spiritually based, somewhat related to my experience, it's somewhat autobiographical, and it's about the fight between black magic and spirit communication. I have CDs that I just created about things like crossing over, creating the life you want, Mother Mary Speaks, Sacred Space, and the healing CD I told you about, and then new travel guides, books based on my experiences in different sacred places in Europe, or Southeast Asia, the Middle East, and it's all about where the power places are, how you access them. It's a different take on a travel book.
Do you ever have a time when you just don't do anything?
Very seldom. I'm trying not to do it. I mean, I think part of my lesson is to relax, be in the flow, trust that everything will happen as it needs to be, and allow all this energy to come through me.
Yeah. One of the things that my wife and I had such great difficulties with 30, 40 years ago when we first got together, when we used to go out to various places where there were apparitions or ghosts, like within Maryland, we would have like Fort McHenry. At Fort McHenry, as you probably know, there were several entities that died there, that suffered there. And one of the more difficult things we experienced was when we would get involved with these particular events, going out and seeing them, our interest really was not to, well, was to try to relieve the area of that particular stress. And of course, this is not a popular thing to do, because
it's not easy.
Well, it's not easy, but also it's not popular as well, because there seems to be an attachment to have these things continue because it's either their an economic interest or it's their claim to fame or whatever.
But, sensational.
But the pain and the suffering that we would experience by having to keep our mouths closed about that was the reason basically we decided we can't do this. Because we're going to be stepping on everybody's toes, and we really do like these people. We just don't agree with the possibility of extending an apparition stay on planet Earth when it should be moving on towards the light. It's just that simple.
Right.
It's not like I'm saying anything unusual. It's just normal. I mean, that's what you do.
Right.
People that are confused and lost, or well, I'm
they
not,
are.
And,
yep.
and they need help, and they need love, and that's really one of the great things about the, in my opinion, Jesus Christ and his belief system and his teachings along those lines, which of course were Jewish teachings at that time. The love and compassion for all living things, and the ability to feel and give love to those who you could be absolutely—they could be your total enemy. And that's one of the things that that's one of the reasons that always attracted me to Christianity, because I just thought that this was, to be able to accomplish such a thing is heroic, to be able to. Oh, boy. And we could certainly use that today with the mess our country is in.
Yeah, we could.
You have a group of people running around saying that our president wasn't born here. And now,
I know,
and that's going to be, they're going to be proven wrong in just a few months, but you know what's going to happen as well as I do. It doesn't matter to a certain group of people. They're still going to lie. They're still going to refuse to believe it and spread other rumors. And that's a malady. That is, that's an imbalance.
It's a kind of, some people would say like the dark side coming up as the light, but the light always wins, but the dark, as soon as the light becomes stronger, the dark, you know, raises its head and tries to find some way to block it.
Well, hon, with the last minute or so we got here, what would you like to leave with our listening audience this evening on January the 2nd, 2011?
Well, I'll just channel a quick little message from Mary.
Thank you, dear.
Okay. My beloved ones, be alone within the whole. Be whole within the aloneness. Do not be afraid that love will not be with you, for it always is, as I am. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, dear.
Okay.
Thank you, Carolyn. I look forward to talking with you again in the future and learning more and more about what you do.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome, dear. And we'll be seeing you soon.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And when we return, friends, well, you're going to talk about UFOs. Yes, indeed. Maryland UFO, Mutual UFO Network. And see what you can do to help out with the Don Borton, who is now the MUFON State Director. We'll be back in just a few minutes.